final case of the day is Ree against the United States. Ms. Buckley.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. At Mr. Ree's trial in the fall of 2002, the government proceeded on a theory that the mere deprivation of property was sufficient for an extortion conviction under the Hobbs Act. But as the Supreme Court's February 2003 decision in Shidler made clear, a conviction under the Hobbs Act requires not only the deprivation, but also the acquisition of property. Under Shidler, an extortion conviction requires, one, that the victim part with his property, and two, that the extortionist gain possession of that property. When Ree filed his opening appellate brief in December 2003, just 10 months after the Shidler opinion issued, his counsel failed to raise this clear and obvious issue, which would have required the reversal of Mr. Ree's convictions. For this reason, Ree received ineffective assistance of counsel on appeal.
Counsel, what difference does an argument about ineffective assistance make here? The reason I ask this is the Supreme Court has held in Boosley and Davis that if somebody is convicted in prison for something, an act the law does not make criminal, then 2255 is available to let him out. That's completely independent of any claim of ineffective assistance of counsel. And your claim seems to be that your client is in prison for an act that the law does not make criminal. Therefore, I would think you would have a direct claim under Davis and Boosley. So I'm puzzled by why you're making an argument about the adequacy of legal services.
Judge Easterbrook, I agree that the law as applied to our client, if their client was not convicted on a theory that the law permits. We are also urging an effective assistance of counsel appeal at issue here.
No, you're not making an argument based on Boosley and Davis. You aren't briefed on the cite them, and you aren't also arguing ineffective assistance. That's your only argument, and that's why I'm puzzled.
That's correct. I don't have an adequate answer for you right now.
And I then pick up your reply brief, and your reply brief says, let's have another trial. But if your theory in the opening brief, is that your client just can't have violated the Hobbs Act, what's the point of another trial?
That was in response to other arguments that the government raised on appeal as to varied and conflicting theories of intangible property rights that the government speculated may be sufficient to show a violation of the Hobbs Act in this case.
Yes, well, but as soon as you say, let's have another trial, it sounds like you're no longer saying Hobbs Act just doesn't cover this. It now sounds like you're trying to make an attack on the jury instructions, which is completely different from what your opening brief said.
Your Honor, I agree. I think, again, that that response was couched in response to what the government was arguing, where the government identified a lot of other intangible property rights that could have been at stake in this case. But the problem was the argument that our reply brief was attempting to make was that the problem is that the government didn't raise these issues in Ree's trial. I pose that as an alternative or an additional response or reply to the arguments
that the government made. It's not an alternative or additional response. It completely contradicts the position taken in your opening brief.
I don't have, an adequate response to that. But the evidence here was that Ree owned a warehouse in Florida,
Counsel, you get to that, if I could just clarify, your client has completed his sentence?
He has, yes. Mm-hmm.
So he really wants a new trial?
He is not asking for a new trial. He's looking for the vacation of his federal criminal conviction.
Then why did your reply brief suggest a new trial?
Perhaps that was an inartfully phrased argument in reply to the government's varied and conflicting theories of what could have happened in this trial. Ray owned a warehouse in Florida, which at one point he tried unsuccessfully to sell to a third person named Daughtry. Later, that person, Daughtry, rented a warehouse from Ray's neighbor, Gregory Leach, and Ray then conspired to coerce his neighbor, Leach, to break the lease with Daughtry. At trial, the government proceeded on a theory that Ray sought to obtain Leach's property by ordering Leach to evict his current tenant, thereby taking away Leach's ability to collect rental payments from that tenant. So the evidence presented at trial showed merely conspiracy to deprive Leach of rental payments, and there's no evidence that Ray ever sought to acquire those rental payments from Leach.
Well, it wasn't the object of the conspiracy to reset the sale negotiations? Because the lease with Leach interrupted mm-hmm. the sale negotiations that were underway between Ray and the buyer.
Well,
Daughtry.
On the same day that the lease began, the real estate agent informed Ray that the negotiations were off. So certainly part of the conspiracy, there's evidence that Ray wanted
right,
Daughtry to buy his warehouse.
That was the whole object of it, was to remove Leach as a competitor so that he could either reopen
exactly.
negotiations for sale or get a lease agreement himself.
Doesn't that involve property? If you get the tenant out of the next-door warehouse and into your warehouse, you get as property the rental value of the rental stream, which he then hoped to capitalize by selling the building, but he's hoping to get that property.
He is looking for an opportunity to sell the warehouse to Daughtry, certainly. But the Hobbs Act requires that the extortionist gain possession of the property from the victim. Here, that victim is Leach.
Well, this is a conspiracy, though, right?
It is a conspiracy. So the object of the conspiracy has to be that he acquire the property from Leach. The district court, denying in part Ray's petition for habeas relief, stated that Ray was found guilty of conspiring to administer physical violence against Leach to prevent him from interfering with Ray's business, thereby depriving Leach of his right to exercise exclusive control over his assets. This is a very precise articulation of the proof at trial by the presiding judge, and it's notable that the district court did not mention that the conspiracy was to acquire property from Leach. And the proof of trial did not show that Ray sought to acquire any property from Leach. Absent proof that Ray sought to acquire that property, the conviction cannot stand after Shidler. Now, the district court explicitly relied on the view of the only dissenting justice in Shidler rather than the majority opinion. And this demonstrates just how difficult.
Well, why wasn't he trying to acquire control over the warehouse?
Why wasn't Ray?
Yeah, trying. What you read from the indictment, isn't that you're trying to acquire control over a competitor? That's the acquisition of something of value. Control.
Control over the assets of a competitor is not what was charged in the indictment here. It's not how the case was presented at trial to the jury. Ray was certainly looking for a business opportunity, the opportunity to sell to Daughtry down the road. But he never sought to acquire any property directly from the victim, Gregory Leach, as the Hobbs Act requires.
Well, suppose you had an antitrust charge that the defendant had threatened his competitor with violence or something like that if the competitor did not raise his prices. Now, wouldn't he be trying to acquire control over his competitor's business? Control in the sense that determining what price to charge is a basic asset that you have. You have a business, comes with the right to decide what price to charge. If someone takes over that right, why isn't that acquiring something of value from the victim.
Telling someone what they can do and what they can't do is coercion under the understanding of the Hobbs Act. So in order to violate the Hobbs Act, you have to acquire something, some property of value, and simply making a business
decision. But does property have to be property in the conventional legal sense, or can it be anything of value?
Certainly, Ray is not contending on appeal that intangible property is not property under the meaning of the Hobbs Act.
I don't mean intangible property. I mean, can anything of value be the subject of extortion?
I think that your first suggestion, that property under the conventional legal standard is what is required under the Hobbs Act. This is a property crime. It's been described as a property crime, or rather extortion has been, just as larceny or robbery. So you actually have to acquire something that is legally understood to be property under the law. I see that my time is up.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Buckley. Ms. McClellan.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Counsel. With respect to appellate counsel, Randall Ray failed to demonstrate that the Shidler claim was so clearly meritorious that only a constitutionally defective lawyer would have overlooked it. Ray conspired to deprive Leach of the rental payments that he received from Daughtry through a savage beating at the hands of Tony Calabrese with the assistance of an aluminum baseball bat. Unlike the abortion protesters in Shidler, Ray sought and pursued something of value, namely the rental payments from the landlord that Leach was receiving, so that he could use those rental payments for the purchase of the warehouse. During the violent beating of Leach, the Leach who is the landlord, the extortionists made clear that they wanted something, and by ensuring the eviction of Daughtry from the warehouse, they would obtain it, namely the rental payments. The issue was not so meritorious that Ray would have prevailed in the Court of Appeals. His goal was not solely to interfere with the landlord's right to rent his warehouse, but rather it was to obtain for himself the money that Daughtry had used to make his rental payments, and that would result in the sale of Leach's the sale of Ray's warehouse. Ray could not have prevailed on this issue on appeal, especially since the issue was forfeited in the district court based on Ray's failure to argue that the government's case was insufficient. The government argued during trial and proceeded to the jury on the theory that it was Ray's conspiracy to obtain from Leach through force and violence the rental payments, money or property, and the district court determined that money or property constituted rental payments. This is not Shidler. A constitutionally effective lawyer could and likely would conclude that nothing in Shidler would change the result in Ray, given the facts of the case, and particularly would conclude that the result wouldn't be any different.
Counsel, you heard my question to Ms. Buckley, which is, what does this have to do with ineffective assistance given Boosley and Davis? Perhaps you would tackle it from that perspective, not asking what a lawyer would or wouldn't have done, whether on this record he was or wasn't innocent.
Your Honor, on this record, Mr. Ray was not innocent.
And why?
He
you have to consider not only Shidler for that purpose, but also Sakhar, last term's decision. I'm a little surprised that the parties haven't been discussing Sakhar.
This isn't Sakhar or Sakhar, Your Honor, because Ray was not seeking simply to interfere with Leach's property right or his right to operate his business or to coerce him to do or not do something. This was something other than coercion, because not only did Ray want Leach to do something, namely to evict the rent-paying tenant, but he wanted to evict him so that the rental payments that Leach received could flow to Ray in the form of the purchase price of the warehouse. In other words, Ray sought to obtain money by threatening a third party or to obtain customer revenues from another by threatening a competitor in the marketplace, which is precisely what footnote number 2 in SACAR says is still a completely viable theory of the Hobbs Act. Ray was seeking with these rental payments, money or property, something that was transferable, something that was capable of being passed. And he sought to deprive Leach of this property for himself. Ray wanted it for himself. That's what he intended when he sent these thugs to Florida to beat Leach up.
What transpired during the phone call between Ray and Daughtry after the beating?
After the beating occurred, Leach called Ray, first, Your Honor, and there was a conversation about the leasehold interest. Then when Ray subsequently called Daughtry, Daughtry advised Ray that there were many other issues relating to the warehouse separate and apart from simply the comment that Ray was angry Leach had made about the sewer line. So when the beating occurred, Ray had information from his realtor that the reason why the sale went sideways was because Leach, the landlord, had made a statement about the sewer line that was false. So Ray thought, that's why I've lost the sale. That's why the beating occurred. That's why the thugs said to Leach, as they're pummeling him with the baseball bat, you know Jimmy? You know Jimmy Daughtry? Tell him to move out. Are you getting the message? We want him to move out. And then when Ray went back and spoke to Daughtry, he learned that there were so many additional problems. It wasn't just the statements about the sewer
right.
line.
Right. My question is the context and content of that conversation clear that Ray was reopening negotiations with Daughtry? Because they had stalled, right?
There had been a counteroffer that had not been responded to, and while those negotiations were pending, Daughtry entered into a lease agreement with Leach,
right.
And the realtor told Ray, you've lost the sale because of Leach. So Ray went to Leach to try to get him to back out of the relationship and evict.
Right, I get all that part. I'm talking about the subsequent conversation between Ray and Daughtry. Is there anything to suggest a benign interpretation?
Of the conversation?
Right, or was it clear that it was, okay, now come back and talk to me about my rental space?
It was clear that there was questioning about why the deal went sideways. And the deal didn't go sideways just because of Leach. There were many other issues. But when Ray sent the thugs, he thought it was only because of Leach that he lost the sale, not because of the other issues that he learned subsequently in the conversation with Daughtry. So it's the government's position that this is not Shidler, it is not SACAR, it's Hobbs. And because of that, the district court correctly concluded that the defendant did not satisfy his burden of demonstrating that trial counsel or appellate counsel were ineffective. And unless the court has any questions, the government will rely on its brief.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.